Someone says, I don't think management's for me. Celebrate that. When somebody says that to you, you need to celebrate and say, great decision. Because as an individual contributor, you have joy in your job by being excellent, by being a subject matter expert.
Don't conduct your analysis in isolation because data is so incredibly powerful.
Not defending just the tribe, but defending the organization.
Those creative people that you really want to keep empowered, keep excited, keep motivated, keep thinking.
A good experience pays dividends down the line.
Stereotypes tend to break down in proximity.
Welcome to We're Only Human, a podcast about human resources, business, technology, and the workplace. My name is Ben Eubanks, your host, and I'm so glad you're here.
Hey everyone, Ben Eubanks here for We're Only Human. I'm really glad you're here with us and looking forward to an amazing conversation today with a leader who cares about enabling managers to be great leaders in our organization. And I'm so excited to talk through some of these kind of things with you here, Cheryl. It's going to be a blast. Welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here and excited to talk through these things as well. Very much so.
So before we get into some of the fun stuff, why don't you tell us a little about who you are and what you do, please?
Wonderful. Well, I am the Chief Human Resources Officer at Baylor University, located in very exciting Waco, Texas, the very center of Texas. And most people know it through Chip and Joanna Gaines and Fixer Upper. And that's fine. That's fine with us. They're graduates of Baylor University. But really came here about 10 years ago after a corporate HR background and have really enjoyed my time here. Have learned a lot. Higher ed HR is different than corporate HR. And it's been really special for me because I did go to school here. This is where I fell in love with HR. And so to be able to come back and give back to the university has been a really important part of my journey.
Can I ask you what you mean when you said fell in love with HR? Because I was one of those people that got HR. Like, I wanted to be in HR when I was a kid, and I don't meet anybody that's like that. So when you talk about that moment you fell in love with it, what was that like?
I will tell you, I actually, and this is, I think, different than a lot of people, but I took it as a college student. Mm-hmm. And there were several of my friends that were in the same section. And I would go to this HR class by Dr. Joe Cox, who ended up being a mentor of mine for many, many years and was so grateful for him. But I would be in the class and was just fascinated. And then I would find myself talking all day long about, you know, the Fair Labor Standards Act, is why it came about is really about this. And, or the things that he said, I would crack up. And finally, one of my friends said, you know, you're the only one in the class that's
delightful.
Yeah. And I was like, no, I'm not. And she said, yeah, you are. You are. And when you talk about the class, you can repeat it exactly. It's very obvious that this is your thing. I didn't do that in accounting. I didn't do that in finance, but I did it in human resources. And so that's really when, and he was a wonderful mentor to me. So that helped cement that relationship greatly.
That's very interestingly, the parallel that I had when I was in school. I was going to, told my friends, hey, I'm going to this school here locally, Athens State University. I said, well, make sure you stay away from Dr. David Nye because he's super hard. His classes are difficult. And I get there, I was like, who teaches the HR classes? David Nye. I'm like, okay, great. And Kim LaFaber was my other HR professor there, and she and I have become friends over the years. I just recently, a month or two ago, reconnected with David Nye. He's retired now and everything else, but I told him, listen, you inspired me so much. I learned so much. Same way as you, like, I soaked everything in, and everybody else is like, I just got to get this class. I'm like, this is the greatest class. I can't wait for that Thursday night, you know, for my classes.
Exactly.
Same thing. So that's fun. Okay. I just wanted to hear about that piece of it because we talk about people falling into the field and everything else. And you don't hear people say the time I fell in love with it. And so I was excited to dive into that with you. So thank you.
Absolutely. I'm glad you asked. It's fun for me to think about too.
Absolutely. Revisit those happy memories, those joyful moments. Yes. Okay, so as I kind of teased up at the beginning today, one of the things I want to talk about with you is the importance of really partnering with and enabling our managers. It's really easy as HR leaders to start wagging the finger or saying, well, our jobs be easier if they would just, like, a lot of conversations start that way, and those aren't productive conversations. But I'd love to hear from you. What do you think the impact of a good manager is on the people around them? And let's just kind of start there. We'll unpack some things we can do practically later on. But what do you think the impact is for a good leader on their team?
Wonderful. I love this subject because it absolutely is the key to your culture, and it's what the manager is bringing. So the manager sets the tone for the team. Sometimes people say, you know, good manager sets a good tone for the team. All managers set the tone for the team. And it's so important to know that. And there are some basic principles you can share with managers that help them understand how important that is. Understanding what's important to them for the team and making sure they do that every single day and they tell their team what's important. And one of the things that we do on our team here is we assume positive intent. And I always tell our team that's a non-negotiable. We assume positive intent. And we may find that it's not always positive intent, but we're going to be the ones that are generous in giving that. Well, that's a tone setting thing. I have employees sometimes say to me, I really am trying to assume positive intent. And this is how I did it. Well, you know, the reason they're saying that is they know it's a critical piece. And so that tone and pace is set by the manager. I think also when you look at the manager role, and this is something that a lot of times we don't like to talk about, but a friend of mine used to always remind us as managers, so whether you like it or not, you have a card that is on your head, or it's an invisible hat. It's not invisible to your employees. To your employees, it says, I can fire you. I do your performance appraisal. I determine your raise. When she would tell us this, we'd say, come on, that's a lot. And my employees don't think that because I really do a good job of nurturing, et cetera. It's not a question. That's the truth. Employees do see you that way. And they may see that in a really positive way, like, gosh, this person does my performance appraisal and they're so fair and they communicate all the time. It can be very positive. But as a manager, you don't get to relinquish that. And you shouldn't. That's part of the joy of managing and leading others. So those two things, I think, are really, really critical. Another little tidbit, this friend of mine would say, as soon as we would promote people in another organization I was in, they would come to a management class. And we would say, welcome to they. They did this. They said this. You know what the managers did? And of course, the managers would go, oh, and we're like, that's okay. We're going to talk about that. And then she would say, and you need to know, now that you're a manager, your employees will talk about you at the dinner table. And they would just balk at the, no, they don't, because we're going to manage it. And then she would ask, do you talk about your boss at the dinner table?
Yes.
Good or bad? Right. I think that the first thing is like, oh, is it bad? But think about when your boss gives you a big compliment when you're leaving and you go home and you go, you won't believe this, guys. I worked on this project. And those are the types of things. And that impact is something that I think all of us should hold in high regard and be good stewards of. But it's also wonderful because you know you're going to have impact in a really important way across the organization.
I love these examples, these stories, because that makes it very practical with people listening in, some ideas and like how to talk about this fundamentally, because every manager is like, well, that's not me, or especially when they're new to it, like, surely not. But every one of us that's made that transition goes through those same kinds of hurdles, the same weird feelings, the same, oh, that didn't feel the same. Like they were friend and now I'm a boss. And so now I'm outside of that bubble a little bit. Even if they treat me friendly, it's not exactly the same. And so helping people to think through those kinds of things. I had, when I speak on leading and managing and transitioning, things like that, one of the things I always talk about is I ask the audience, tell me about a leader you had that was truly incredible. Yeah. Like some of these people you're talking about here that really like those compliments you come home with and those kind of things. And I do that because it's really easy for us as HR people to think about, oh, managers, and hone in on that one over there who causes some of the headaches and the trouble and challenge, gives us extra work to do. Like, don't forget you have those other ones, those really positive and amazing ones already there. Mm-hmm. And many times we don't do a good job of elevating their stories. Let's tell the stories of what they're doing, not just to shine a spotlight on them, but to tell others what we expect of managers here. This is what good looks like, and really kind of set that bar in a good place instead of just saying most manager training is don't do this, don't do that, bad things will happen. But we don't tell them, here's what we expect from you, what good looks like and how you can be great here as a leader. We miss the boat on that sometimes.
That's exactly right. And I think I like the way you said telling their stories. Because I think when you do that, you get beyond the formulaic. You know, if sometimes when we give different tips or ideas about management, sometimes people can try to adapt it and it's just not them. I actually taught a class for managers at this company that I was at, and I had a co-facilitator. We had like a list of things, I think, on the back of the workbook, like be assertive, just this hodgepodge of things. I don't know why it was on the back of the workbook, but we had it there. Well, we're walking down one morning to get some coffee, and this employee comes down. She says, I need to talk to you too. And that rarely happened because we were in training. People always, you know, were like, oh, I left your class. And we're like, what's wrong? And she said, you know, so-and-so, she names her manager. And we're like, of course. And we knew we had just had him in class. And she said, he's all messed up now. He's all messed up. He came back in from your class acting weird, standing weird, saying weird things, doing weird hand motions. And I'm sitting there going, oh my goodness. And it occurred to me, he has implemented all of those bullets on
every one of them.
You weren't supposed to do them all. You were supposed to tailor them. But my friend said the best thing. She said, don't worry, he won't be able to keep that up. He'll be fine by next week. And she goes, he better be, or I'm coming. I'm going to come talk to you. Well, I thought the point on that was so good. We cannot be who we are not. Mm-hmm. And if you go formulaic with manager training, you're going to encourage people maybe to do things they really aren't, or try to do a style that doesn't work for them. When you tell stories and narratives, like you were talking about, there's something about it that you know, okay, I don't need to be that person in the story. I need to adapt it to who I am and where I am. So I think that's a wonderful way to do it.
I think of all the things you see online, people like, give exactly 2.7 pieces of feedback per week and formulaic as it gets. And yep. For some leaders, like that's so stilted and formal and feels very weird to them. Others are like, I can't tell Cheryl she's great only twice a week. Like, what's going on there? Like, this is missing out. So definitely the adaptation piece, I think, is important. One other thing I want to ask you is we're talking a lot about these managers like they're already there, but there's a point where they weren't there. Can we talk about the selection piece a little bit, how we pick them? Because when I talk about this, and you probably know this exact thing, when I talk about this in front of HR leaders, I'm like, how many of us have picked a manager in the last month, moved them up because of how long they've been at the company? And everybody's like,
that's right.
Kind of looking side-eyed at each other. We know what happens. We're kind of giggle about it, but it's a terrible measure for what makes someone a good leader and why they should be moved up. And yet it happens. So talk about that piece a little bit, what we could be doing or should be doing to be looking for them.
Yeah, I'll share with you a smaller idea than a big picture idea that we actually implemented at an organization. The smaller idea is somehow figure out a way to present the truths of the job to people as they're applying for managers, just like you do when they are applying to your company or your organization. You try to give them an accurate feel. It's hard to do, but don't gloss over the not fun parts, giving them an example of that. Now, the bigger idea that's based on that, I was at an organization and we created and developed something called the Manager Candidate School. And what that was is we had people that were nominate high potentials by organizations within our organization, not in the manager seat yet. And they would come and we had really a 6 to 9 month curriculum. They were a cohort. They'd come back together. We had different role plays that real live managers at this company had said, this is hard. We taught them a feedback model and then we'd have them apply. They would do role plays in front of each other. And what would happen is as they were in that, I always wanted to call it, so you think you want to be a manager, .. because that was really the intent of it. The best story I have from this, it was actually somebody that ended up maybe not going the way we thought they were going to go at the beginning. I had some friends that were teaching this class, some coworkers, and one of them finally called me and she said, we had this person in class. It's just not going well. I was like, what's the matter? Highly recommended, very high potential person in their area. But when they were doing role plays and the facilitators would do it with them and pretend they were the employee, he was snippy, was dismissive, asked, do I have to do this type thing? Well, a lot of people don't like to do role plays in front of other people, but that was very much part of it. We had not had that criticism. Oh, I said, I'm going to just come down. I got to see this. And they're like, yeah, you need to see it because this is not working. So I came down and I said, well, I'll just do a few with him. And so we kind of sectioned off to the room and we had this scenario and he was going to have to coach me, the employee, for being late. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I can see he does not want, like, he is not excited about doing this at all. And he's not concerned that I've come in. Like, he's like, I didn't like doing it with them and I'm not going to like doing it with you. And so we're getting ready to start. And right before he goes, can I just ask you something? I really need to know this. I said, sure. He said, why do these people not do what they're supposed to do? And I go, these people, the employees? He goes, yes, they're all late. They're all this, they're all that. And we're doing all this stuff. Why don't they just do what they're supposed to do? Like, I don't understand this. And it hit me. This guy was high potential. He was always on time. He didn't have issues. He was always the star. He did not understand that sometimes it's not like that. And sometimes you don't have exemplar employees. And I told him, I said, thank you for asking that question. I said, believe it or not, there are a lot of times when it's not going quite right. And as a manager, your job is to help. He said, he goes, I didn't even know that there were that many employees not doing what they should be doing. And I said, well, it's a frame. And I said, but do you think you'd enjoy doing this type of thing? And he said, absolutely not. I said, hooray. We have just prevented a team from being unsuccessful. We've prevented you from not liking your job. And we're going to figure out a way to map out a trajectory for you as an individual contributor. It wasn't a success in the fact that he didn't get placed as a manager and we all went, oh, but more importantly, he opted out of being a manager because he understood the truth. Now, again, a manager candidate school is a big idea, but I guess the return on investment that we got is we had managers going in eyes wide open. And when you do that, you're more likely to be successful. So for managers, I think it's very important that we really normalize the fact that it is a difficult job. And there are tools that we can give them that they can really flourish. But helping them understand this is not easy and it's the toughest job you'll ever love. And the reason for that is you have the ability to impact people in a way that means so much to them. It impacts their families. It impacts the way they feel about work. So that's important for them to know. It's difficult going in, and you as an HR team are going to be there to support them. It's also important when someone says, I don't think management's for me. Celebrate that. When somebody says that to you, you need to celebrate and say, great decision, because as an individual contributor, you have joy in your job by being excellent, by being a subject matter expert, by being the person that is able to really influence within that circle and make a difference within the organization, to be a role model for others. Other managers will look to you and say, see that? That's an exemplar. And so knowing that regardless of which way you go, there's joy in the journey is a really important piece for all employees.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. So often it's, let me know if you have any problems. And they're like, is this a problem? How do I even know? Like, I didn't even realize it was an issue. And we throw them into the deep end. And if they are like that person, we're like, man, I really wish I could go back to that. There's no reverse. It's a one-way street. And so either succeed or you have to leave to save face. There are some companies that have done some creative things, like you're talking about here. I love that manager candidate school. I think of my friends in the military, like OCS, Officer Candidate School, where they're going through it and getting that right. But I think there are companies that I've met that say, we have a try before you buy sort of thing where managers can test, people can test it out for a few months before they have to commit to it. And that sort of idea is a great one. It's really hard. It's difficult, but it could help us prevent a lot of the problems we have when someone gets into that role and they're not suited for it, or they thought this only way to move up is to go in that direction, even if I really like what I'm doing.
Everyone wants to do this. Yeah. That's right.
Give this up. So you see some of the data that has come out in the last few years, like the younger workers are like, I have no interest in being a manager. And I think it's because, we hear those stories, we see all the movies of the terrible bosses. No one ever celebrates and tells the stories of the ones who are great and truly doing a good job of keeping their people connected and supporting them and serving them well. Like, those stories aren't fun to tell, I guess, in the news. So they don't tell those. We hear about the jerk who fired 500 people on Zoom or something like that.
That's exactly right. Or through an email.
Yes. Yes. Carol, I have something to tell you. No. Thank you. Appreciate that. This conversation around selection is a good one. Anyone listening here to the podcast that is really curious about that piece, I went really deep with that with Ji Yun Kong. I believe I got her name right again, from the Mayo Clinic. We talked about how they select leaders, some key things like you're talking about here, some good ideas and stuff. So I'll put that episode link in the show notes, episode 146, because that was a good conversation on this leadership selection piece. I think that's a really important aspect of that. Okay. So for the people listening here, all our friends who are in HR and talent and in learning as well, they're thinking about, I've got some good ideas. Anything else practical? Any other ideas or things that you can share here that would help them think through how to do this, how to support their leaders? You've given some really good ones, both large and small already. So if there was nothing else, I'm like, I'm feeling great. But anything else you want to share to enable them?
You know, this, I feel like this probably goes without saying, and yet it's so important to be an effective HR team and to be an effective HR professional. We have to do what we are expecting others in the organization to do. And so many times in organizations, that's what ends up being mocked in the movies or TVs.
Oh, yes.
You're awesome at telling me to do one-on-ones. But in HR, they're not doing one-on-ones. Why don't you have to do that? Or you're great at telling me that I don't have good succession planning, but HR doesn't do succession planning. It is that notion. It is always easier to tell than do, but I do not think we should tell before we do it and before we know. So our credibility comes from when we're working with a leader and we talk about one-on-ones and we say, no, it's difficult. Your calendar's already so busy. But I guarantee you, if you set up a one-on-one schedule, it will create time for you. And I know for me personally, it was difficult. But if they sense in any way I'm asking them or telling them to do something that I don't do myself, the credibility not only of myself, but our entire department is put at risk. So again, it's a basic, but as HR professionals, really to think through that. And also as HR professionals, know the business you support. Too many times HR is kind of like, we're HR. We don't understand P&L statements. We're HR. You're HR supporting an organization. And you don't need to be the CEO and understand finance at that level, but you do need to know how your business makes money, how it spends money, and how your team can help support that moving forward. And so two passionate things about HR, and I think they're givens, and yet sometimes in our busyness, we forget some of those things.
I want to clap here on the show. I just hear that clapping. I love the piece there about knowing the business. I want to tell you something to make you smile, make you laugh. I don't think I've told this on the podcast before, but years ago when I was writing about some of my early career experiences, I kept getting people reaching out like, hey, can you give me advice? I've got an interview for HR role. So I was giving them advice. And this young lady said, hey, I totally screwed up my interview, but I still got the job offer. I said, what did you do in the interview? I'm like, how did that go? She said, well, I was interviewing this company. They made rubber materials. And the CEO is asking her something as like an HR assistant, like very just entry level. CEO's asking questions because it's a small company and said, why do you think our capital costs are going up every year? And when you mentioned business a minute ago, that's the first thing I thought of. And she's like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. She's like, rubber doesn't grow on trees. And you're like, actually, rubber comes from a tree. That's actually where it comes from a plant. And the CEO breaks out laughing, thinking she's joking with him. And thinks it's the funniest thing. And it's like, we need that kind of person on our HR team. You're And she said, you know, in spite of me not knowing that, she said, but that was my reminder. It's kind of silly, but she said, from then on, I was like, I'm going to know how this works. I'm going to know, I'm not a scientist, but I'm going to know the details of this because this is how we operate as a company. And if we've got to hire someone to do that, I've got to train someone to do that, I've got to know what the safety issues are around that. I've got to know that in order to support the people side of the business, just like you're talking about there. So whether it's higher ed, whether it's whatever industry you're listening out there right now, whatever industry that you're in, know a little bit of the intricacies, the nuances, know if your product does grow on trees or not, because it's going to make you more effective as an HR leader because you know which buttons to push, which levers to pull on the people side of the business to support that.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And how to justify your decisions and your thoughts and to help frame different things for employees. It's just critical. And I think too many times we've abdicated that under the, well, we're the people people. Mm. Well, the people are supporting a product, something that they're taking to market, and to support them well, you need to understand that. And so it's just critical.
Yeah, wonderful. Goodness. I've gotten so many good notes, so many good ideas and takeaways from this conversation. And I'm hoping everybody else out there has got that same inspiration and encouragement to go out there and think about how to put some of these things in place at their own organizations. If someone has heard this, you're like, wow, Cheryl is incredible. Are you okay if they reach out and connect with you on LinkedIn?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I love that. And especially the HR professionals, you know, we really do need to stick together and encourage each other because it is, it's such important work. And so absolutely would love to talk to anyone through LinkedIn.
Okay, perfect. I'll make sure and get your link into the show notes here. Thank you so much for joining me. This has been a ton of fun. I've enjoyed it so much.
I have enjoyed it as well. Thank you for doing this podcast and really, really grateful for the important work you're doing.
Wonderful. To everybody else out there, go out there, support your leaders so they can support their people. And we'll catch you again next time on We Are Only Human.
Thank you so much for joining me on the show today. I'm honored to have you as a listener. If you enjoyed this episode, please take 10 seconds to rate it at iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to your podcast. Also, if you know a friend that could benefit from today's conversation, please pass it their way. After all, a rising tide lifts all ships. To see show notes, sponsor information, and our full show archives, visit onlyhumanshow.com.